Our admissions office has done a wonderful job of selecting you and attracting you here. There are, as Jason told you, 370 of you representing 132 different undergraduate institutions and selected from 6,548 applicants. You arrive here with a remarkably broad set of backgrounds, interests, and aspirations. And you are extraordinarily well qualified. Based on the numerical indicators, which are certainly not the only mark of quality, but a telling one, you are indeed the most qualified class that's ever arrived at this law school. Those qualifications put you in a position to become an outstanding lawyer, but they're only part of what will make you a Virginia lawyer. In selecting you, we were mindful of the special qualities that our students have had for as long as I've been associated with the law school and well before that. A capacity and willingness to view learning as a collaborative enterprise. A healthy sense of balance among work, relaxation, family, and friends. An interest in the world around you and in the broader world as well. And a willingness and inclination to invest in community. You will find those investments amply rewarded here. I recently had lunch with a member of the law school class of 1974. Now, in his day, the first year small sections were divided up alphabetically by the last name of the student. And my lunch companion remarked that he had recently been struck by the fact that most of his best friends had last names that began with N, O, or P, which was his small section. And I can confidently predict that some of your closest friends over the remainder of your lives will come from within this room. You already benefit from the generosity of many of the more than 16,000 men and women who have preceded you as law students at the University of Virginia. We are a public law school, but we do not receive public funds. Our budget comes from the tuition you pay and the gifts that our alumni and friends make to the law school. Last year, 52% of those more than 16,000 alumni sent us a donation. To the best of my knowledge, there is not another law school in the nation that can boast of such a high giving rate. It reflects one simple and enduring fact. Our students enjoy their time here. Many of them remember it as three of the most enjoyable years of their lives. And they are eager for you to have the same experience, so eager that they voluntarily finance almost a third the cost of your legal education. My primary function today is to introduce our speaker, Judge Wilkinson, about whom more in a moment, but I'd also like to share with you a few observations about the experience ahead. That experience will be transformative. The way that you analyze questions will undergo such a profound change that in a few short months you will find it hard to recreate the way you used to think before you arrived at law school. You've come here to study the law. What exactly does that mean? One meaning of the term law is a rule, just like the rules of the game. So here's a legal rule. Article 1, Section 2 of the U.S. Constitution provides that no person shall be a representative who shall not have attained to the age of 25 years. Now, despite the archaic language, there cannot be much doubt about what that means. You can't become a congressman or congresswoman until you're 25 years old. Now, to a lay person, and until 15 minutes ago that included you, that's what law is all about. It's a rule book. Indeed, Napoleon famously attempted to set out in one legal code all of the rules that would be necessary to resolve any potential dispute, so that one had only to turn to the correct page to get the correct answer. He failed in that endeavor, as he did in a number of his other projects. But here, failure was inevitable. most of the questions that you will encounter in law school and in your legal careers fall in the gaps in which there is no explicit rule. There, the rules that do exist are used as premises, analogies, or examples. They're the raw material, the tools that the lawyer uses to construct an argument that will persuade the listener as to the correct answer to the question at hand. The lawyer's task, then, is to persuade. To persuade is not merely to dispute or disagree. Perhaps some of you are familiar with the wonderful Monty Python argument clinic sketch. In the sketch, Michael Palin's character walks into a room having paid to have an argument and expecting a wonderful intellectual conversation. Instead, what he gets is John Cleese mechanically contradicting everything he says. And after about a minute of this, he throws up his hands in disgust and says, "But this isn't an argument." To which Cleese, of course, replies, "Yes, it is." Well, it isn't a legal argument because it isn't an attempt to persuade. To persuade implies eventual agreement on an analytical proposition, and that is what a lawyer attempts to achieve. The great skill that lawyers possess that facilitates persuasion is the ability to reason with clarity, consistency, and precision. We call that skill thinking like a lawyer, and acquiring it will be the main task of your first year in law school. Having learned to think like a lawyer, you will then apply that skill to a variety of substantive areas of your choice as you continue your legal education. But without the basic analytical tools, the raw materials of the substantive legal rules would be of little use. Successful legal argument, then, requires well-developed analytical skill and a thorough grounding in substance. It does not require abusiveness or rancor. Fortunately, you will discover that Virginia graduates have a well-deserved reputation for being able to find common ground when it's available and to disagree respectfully when it's not. That's no mere coincidence. The faculty and your fellow students place a high value on civility. Indeed, it was one of the things that first attracted me to the law school back in 1990, and I hope that you will come to appreciate and value it as well.